First, the pandemic saw many cities allow bars and restaurants to expand out into sidewalks and streets for safer outdoor dining. It took away some parking and made many areas more pedestrian-friendly. As we've moved back to more of a post-pandemic-ish normal, it's raised questions about how we should use street space in our communities. Our next guest says free or cheap parking comes at a big cost, that cities should stop offering free parking for vehicles and stop requiring new construction developments to include off-street parking. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How important is parking to you? When you look at your community, big or small, downtown or maybe on the outskirts, do you think there is too much space for parking? Not enough? Do you want to see changes? What questions do you have for our guest? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Donald Shoup is a distinguished research professor in the Department of Urban Planning at UCLA. He's the author of the book, The High Cost of Free Parking. Don, welcome to Central Time.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
I've been arguing for years, Don, that there's really no such thing as free parking. In a nutshell, what are some of the biggest costs of providing parking, either for free or under market value?
Well, I think that the right person to pay for parking is the driver. And I think the drivers don't want to pay for parking, including you and me. So I think that we've made parking very different from everything else in the economy. It's almost all free everywhere. I'm not against free parking. I'm against the idea of underpriced parking. I think the right price for curb parking is the lowest price that cities can charge and have one or two open spaces. So for most of the city, that would be free. But in crowded areas, I think you should charge the right price, meaning the lowest price the city can charge, have one or two open spaces on every block, so the drivers would always see an open parking space wherever they go. It wouldn't be free, but it would be easy. I think that parking should be easy to find and easy to pay for, but not necessarily free.
What has led to kind of the thinking that we had that we provide as much parking as humanly possible? What led to our, I guess, current state of affairs?
Well, it wasn't the automobile industry. I think it was their customers who want free parking. And I think that the key to getting parking prices right is to do what some cities are doing now, is to establish parking benefit districts that have two features. One, they charge this the right price for curb parking, so there are open spaces available everywhere. And then the important thing is that they spend all the meter revenue to pay for added public services on the metered blocks. They repair sidewalks, they plant street trees. Some cities give free Wi-Fi to everybody on the metered streets, or they give free transit passes to everybody on the metered streets, so that the residents see the advantage of the paid parking, because they're going to get public services paid for by the parking meters. And the cities that have done that have been really successful, that if they do one, they start adding more. So I think especially in compact areas, densely populated areas, where there are many more people than there are curb parking spaces.
Speaking of people versus parking spaces, I've seen some statistics about how much space we provide to park our cars in one place or another versus how much space we provide, say, people to live in. Can you talk about how that's shaped our landscapes?
Well, yes, I think we have so much parking because we have these minimum parking requirements everywhere. If you're going to have free curb parking, you have to provide off-street parking, or else people will drive around endlessly hunting for a curb parking space. So we've solved the shortage of parking by requiring off-street parking everywhere, which drives up the price of everything, especially housing. many cities, you can't build any apartments with less than two parking spaces, or in LA, 2.5 parking spaces. So that everybody pays for parking except for the drivers. And that means that we all pay for parking except in our role as a driver.
We're talking to Donald Shoup, Distinguished Research Professor at UCLA and Urban Planning, author of the book, The High Cost of Free Parking. He says in a lot of our communities, we need to rethink the priority we put on parking. Main point, where parking is scarce in particular, make sure drivers are paying for it. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Give us a report from your community, big or small. Do you feel like there's not enough parking or it's too expensive? Or do you think there's maybe too much priority being put on convenient parking? At what cost and to whom? What would you like to see change, if anything? And what questions do you have for our guest, who's been looking at these issues for quite a while now? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Don, I understand at the outset of your career, not many people were looking at the economics of parking. What led you down that path?
Well, I started out studying in land economics, and I wrote my PhD dissertation on that, and then I realized that parking is the single biggest land use in any city, that more than housing, more than commerce, more than anything else. And yet, people had, certainly academics, hadn't paid much attention. Say, transportation planners didn't pay any attention to curb parking because nothing is moving. Land use planners didn't think about curb parking because it's in the roadway. Nobody had paid much attention to it. But I think now that people are thinking carefully about it, they think that, well, yes, our cities are designed for cars. I think if most neighborhoods wouldn't object to that, there being more people, if they didn't bring cars. Mm-hmm. And with parking requirements, it ensures that they do bring cars. Say, you started off talking about the converting some curb parking spaces into dining. It's been a terrific success in most cities that the curb parking space that's turned into a restaurant hires many more people and serves many more people and pays many more taxes than one empty car. So I think that the COVID has made a big difference in that regard to opening our eyes. But maybe it's happened in Wisconsin cities too, but the biggest success in places like Los Angeles is what they call the al fresco program, is that the restaurants can turn their parking lots into outdoor dining, which is just the opposite of minimum parking requirements, which says that if you have more seats, you have to have more parking. And this is turning into more seats and less parking. And it is wildly successful because it's being made permanent as well. For restaurants, do you really think that you have to reserve space for cars rather than for people? But that's what minimum parking requirements do, that the land cannot be used for dining. It has to be used for cars. And most people are waking up to the fact that minimum parking requirements are a pseudoscience. They look scientific, but planners don't know how to set parking requirements. They learn nothing about it during their planning education because their professors have nothing to teach. All the planning students learn about minimum parking requirements is that they get in the way of everything they want to do, have affordable housing or have walkable neighborhoods or have a better urban design. No, I think that the COVID, as you pointed out at the beginning, has opened our eyes to what other cities are doing already. Say, there are other cities around Wisconsin. Say, Minneapolis has gotten rid of its parking requirements, and Buffalo, and South Bend, Indiana, and Ann Arbor. There are a lot of. I can imagine there are many parts of cities in the denser parts of cities in Wisconsin where you could begin to charge the market price for curb parking, just equate supply and demand and spend the revenue to repair sidewalks, or in your part of the world, shovel snow. Make sure that the meter money, if it shoveled snow as soon as it fell, I suspect people would say, well, I can see that. That the parking meters are paying for something I want, and I won't get that unless we charge for curb parking.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Ron is with us in River Hills. Ron, hi.
Hi there. Well, my question is two-part in a sense. That is, there are some cities in the world that are eliminating parking in their city altogether. Part of it is, I think, the environmental movement. Part of it is people should be the priority in cities and not cars and transportation like cars. And I'd like to know if there are any cities in the United States that are following that format.
Ron, thanks for the call. Don, forbidding apartment buildings to even have parking spaces. Have we seen this in the U.S.?
Yes. We're not talking about getting rid of parking spaces. We're talking about getting rid of parking requirements and charging for scarce curb parking. You know, I think a city where everyone happily pays for everybody else's free parking is a ship of fools. But I agree with the caller. And I think that the cities that have begun with these parking reforms that I recommend, which is charging the right price for curb parking and spending the revenue on public services on the metered streets and getting rid of parking requirements, I think the best examples are San Francisco and Portland and Pasadena, California was one of the first cities that did this. But it's spreading. Say several cities in Texas have gotten rid of their parking requirements and start charging for the right prices for curb parking and spend the revenue on metered services. I think whether you're a communist or a capitalist, many people would agree that clean and safe sidewalks are more important than free parking.
Thanks for that call, Ron. We're talking to UCLA urban planning professor Don Shoup about rethinking parking in our cities, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What is parking like in your neighborhood, maybe in the downtown in your community? Do you wish there were better alternatives to driving and parking in the first place? How would you like to see local transportation and parking in particular change where you live or where you visit? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. The conversation continues coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up the conversation with Don Shoup from UCLA's Department of Urban Planning, author of the book, The High Cost of Free Parking. He says we need to make sure that drivers are paying the costs for parking wherever they park in a city or a community. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think? What have you experienced in your community? Do you think of parking as a pain? Do you want more and more and cheaper and convenient parking? Or do you like this idea of charging more, using that money to pay for improvements right where that parking is? Call 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or your questions. Let's go back to your calls now. Roger is with us in Bayfield. Roger, hi.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Roger?
Well, in 2000, I had the privilege and honor of traveling to the old country, the Netherlands, with my mother and visited family. But one of the things I observed, and this was true in small towns, like where my grandfather was born and raised, but also in a college town, Groningen, which would be on the scale of Madison, there were parking lots on the periphery of the towns and cities, and then they had convenient, well-maintained bike paths or walking paths going into the town or city square. So people tended to park on the edge of the city, pay a fee at a meter, and then go into town and do their business, whatever their business was.
Interesting. Roger, thanks for that call. What do you think of the idea, I guess, of parking on the periphery like that, Don?
Well, I think that the right prices will encourage people to do that. The price will be for curb parking will be higher in the center of town but lower in the periphery. So somebody who wants to save money can park in the periphery and walk farther or bicycle. But some people, they're in a hurry or they're late for an appointment or something like that. They may want to drive closer to the center and pay more so everybody can make the right choice for them. But that's only if the curb parking is priced properly, so that if it has one or two open spaces, it's like the Supreme Court's definition of pornography. I know it when I see it. You just look at a block and you can tell whether the price is too high or too low by whether all the spaces are empty, then the price is probably too high. If none are empty, are vacant and open, the price is too low. So I think that this Goldilocks pricing is the right one. People may have to pay for parking, but it'll always be available. And as in the Netherlands, that they price the parking properly. I think that the parking policies in the Netherlands are among the best in the world. And I think that if we adopted that kind of parking policy, we would be able to reclaim land from parking like the Netherlands reclaimed land from the ocean. That we have a lot of land that is now committed to parking by law. And I think all we have to do, it doesn't cost anything to repeal a parking requirement, as in the many cities have done it. At no cost, we could begin reclaiming this land that city planners have dedicated to parking for almost 100 years.
Thanks for that call, Roger. We heard from Mark in Richland Center, who says, lack of and availability of public transportation. How does that influence parking spaces? Public transportation and parking, how do they play with each other?
Well, I think that the U.S. spends more on transportation subsidies than any other country, but we lack in this country as riders, not so much as buses. And I think that it would be much better if, say, like Boulder, Colorado, that they in their downtown they have parking meters and they give free transit passes to everybody who lives or works downtown. So I think that that will increase the demand for transit. And if the demand increases, they can run buses more frequently. And I think that if you begin charging for curb parking, you'll find that it's not as precious as people thought. That in San Francisco, when they started charging for curb parking, the prices went down to 25 cents an hour on 17% of the meters of the city. So I think that you'll be able to find out that, well, we could have bus lanes, which would speed buses and bicycle lanes. You can't if the price of parking is very low, then it'll signify that the drivers are not demanding very much, and we could have more dedicated bus lanes and more dedicated bike lanes.
Thanks for that call. Don, I want to bring up a particular constituency that I imagine you run into sometimes, downtown business owners. In another life, I was at downtown business group meetings, and a big concern was, okay, our competition in the malls or the big box stores has infinite free parking, basically, to compete on a level playing field. They might say, we need this subsidized, inexpensive, convenient parking. If you bump up the prices, you're just sending our customers out to those stores with the huge parking lots. What do you say to convince them that a change is needed?
Well, remember, the price I'm recommending is just one or two open spaces on every block. So you can't say that people are being driven away. The only people who aren't coming are people who are unwilling to pay for parking, and their spaces will be taken by people who are willing to pay for parking. And who do you think will leave a bigger tip at a restaurant? Somebody won't come downtown unless they can drive around for 15 minutes to find a free curb parking space, or somebody who's willing to pay for parking right on the block of the restaurant if they can find a space. So I think that and cities that have done what I'm talking about, like Pasadena is the famous example of it, that they had free parking everywhere, and the merchants and their employees moved their cars every two hours to get it, keep a free space. So they complained about lack of parking for the customers. So when the city said, "Well, we'll put in the parking meters and we'll give you all the revenue to fix up every sidewalk in the neighborhood," they said, "Well, let's do that. Let's run the meters till midnight. Let's run up on Sunday. Let's charge a high price." And the sales tax revenue in the 5 years after they put in the meters and spent the revenue on added public services, the sales tax revenue tripled, meaning which is a measure of business activity. So you cannot say that it's going to the charging the right price for curb parking and spending the revenue in downtown is going to harm downtown.
Don, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
That's Donald Shoup, a distinguished research professor in the Department of Urban Planning at UCLA. He's the author of the book, The High Cost of Free Parking. He's with us today sharing his research on the problems with public parking in cities and why even free parking isn't really free. Still time for you to weigh in with your experiences in your hometown or around the world. What bugs you about parking? Not enough of it, too expensive, or too much of it and too cheap, as our guest was saying. Share your experiences, maybe your reactions. Head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page. That's the Ideas Network Facebook page. Or you can email ideas@wpr.org.